Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. Today I'm interviewing author Shelley Westerhausen, who wrote Vegetarian Heartland, Recipes for Life's Adventures. Welcome, Shelley.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So your book is very interesting. It's very beautiful, too. It's got great pictures of food. And so I understand you first started a vegetarian blog?
I did, yeah. So about 7 years ago, I started a vegetarian blog just to kind of document becoming a vegetarian in the world of vegetarian and kind of like the fails and the things that worked. And then from there, I just started photographing and writing about food.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you mean to do that? I mean, did it start as a hobby and turned into a job, or what did you major in at college? How did it happen?
So it definitely started out as a hobby. I started in college. I've always kept journals and diaries ever since I was a little kid,
mm-hmm.
So it kind of just felt natural to transfer to blog once, you know, that kind of world was created.
Mm-hmm.
And then in college, I studied art management and art administration.
Okay.
So it's kind of loosely tied. It's kind of where I got the business bug side of it, but I had mostly started it as a way to just keep journaling online and just write about food, and then it just kind of got bigger and bigger.
Okay. Now, you also do a magazine called Driftless. What's that about?
Yeah, so Driftless is a lifestyle magazine all about the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my friend Leah Fithian started it a few years ago. It kind of just came about because we kind of felt like the Midwest was getting overshadowed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really great stuff, you know, happening all over, but a lot of the press is for the West Coast and the East Coast, the big cities, and we kind of felt like we had a lot of cool stuff going on here, and we wanted to showcase it.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there edibles, the edible magazine in the Midwest?
There are, yeah, but they're great. They're really great. We don't personally have one in my city,
mm-hmm.
But we kind of wanted to do something a little bit more modern that targeted a younger audience. There's
mm-hmm.
not really a really good, like, we have Midwest Living, but we don't have a good magazine for the 20-something-year-olds
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the younger generation. So we kind of wanted to start something that kind of felt more like a kinfolk for the Midwest.
Okay, and it looks quite beautiful also.
Thank you. Yeah, Leah is a photographer, as am I. So we both were very particular about the aesthetic and the photography in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you were doing art management in college, what were you planning on it being photography art management?
I was not. I kind of just got the photography bug with the blog, just because I was photographing the recipes to go with the blog, and I just really ended up liking that aspect of it. When I was doing in college, I was actually looking at the music end of it. So I wanted to maybe work for a music label or, you know, a venue or something like that. And then I kind of got the food bug and the photography bug. So I went in that direction.
Okay, I understand. Now, when did the idea come up for turning it into a book?
So I had been doing the magazine probably for a year or two. And that was when my agent came to me, and she just loved my aesthetic, and I had just been working with, like, Bon Appetit and Food and Wine, so I was kind of getting a couple of good plugs, and she, you know, she said that she loved my vibe, and she loved, like, the Midwest angle, so she was curious if I ever would want to unite the two, because I was doing the magazine, and then I was doing the blog, and she kind of wanted to see a mix of the two, and I really loved the idea, so we just ran with it.
Mm-hmm. So your publisher came to you. That's always great, right?
Well, actually, my agent came to me, and then she helped me write the proposal, and then she pitched it to publishers.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's good. Now, did you know right away the book would be as gorgeous as it is, have as many photographs? Was that the idea from the start?
So I definitely wanted it to be photography heavy just because I love photography and I love that aspect of it. And I really wanted to showcase the Midwest, so I wanted it to be more than just food photos. I wanted it to be something that someone opens up and is like, I want to see the Great Lakes. I want to visit this place. So I did definitely know I wanted it to be a big mix between the two, which is one of the reasons it took 3 years to write, because I wanted to make sure I was capturing all four seasons and that I was going to as many different areas in the Midwest as I could.
Well, that was one of my next questions. How long did it take you to write and work on the book?
Yeah, it took 3 years from start to finish, but that did include, that was from when I got my agent to when it came out. So that included pitching it and getting a publisher and then writing it. And then the photographs took a long time, obviously. And then the time that the publisher spent with it for designing and things like that.
How long between when you put it to bed and it came out?
It was probably about a year.
Oh, that must be tough.
All of that.
That must be tough while you're waiting.
Yeah, it is, and it's been a little bit of a learning experience, just because for me, I'm used to my blog, so I make something and then I put it into the world.
Right.
And this, I made it, and then I sat on it for a year.
Right.
And couldn't really talk about it or anything.
Right. Well, now, were you allowed to say my book's coming out?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. But as someone who's always growing, I'm always, you know, kind of on to the next thing, and then to be like wanting to like share this now and tell everyone about it. It was just a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, just twiddling your thumbs.
Yeah.
So now, how did you select the recipes? Were they already on your blog? Were they your personal favorites? Did you get help selecting them?
So for the recipes, I would say probably about 90% of them are new. There were, I think, only like maybe three or four that were the most popular recipes on my blog that I then kind of tweaked a little and put in here just because I knew that people love those recipes. But for the most part, they were all new. I basically, I try to take a lot of like family recipes, and which are all have meat in them, of course, and then try to make them vegetarian and just kind of think of the food that I grew up with and things that kind of had a little bit of a Midwest connection, even, you know, if it's because we had a big Polish community where I grew up, or if it's just because it's a corn recipe because we grow a ton of corn here, or just some sort of connection in some way to the heartland.
Okay. Is there a higher standard for testing recipes for books versus blogs, do you know?
So I've heard all sorts of stories about different ways people do it. I personally did do a ton of testing because I was terrified of getting like one of those Amazon reviews that were like, these recipes didn't work or something like that, you know?
She left out an important ingredient.
Exactly. Because with a blog, you can go back and edit it. But when it's in print, it's in print.
Yeah.
So for the blog, I usually only make the recipe maybe twice, unless it's a recipe I really, you know, it's been a family recipe. But for the book, I try to make every recipe at least 3 to 5 times, oftentimes more. And then I had at least two other people also try out the recipe.
Yeah, I would think it works for them. Important to have other people do it because they may, you may know certain things that you don't realize aren't communicated in the recipe.
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Things that I think that everyone would think to do, you know, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be thinking to do that. Or
right.
maybe my wording was weird and it came across completely different than how I visualized it. Or maybe I forgot to put that part in there.
Right. Did you find any errors? Did you have to make a lot of changes?
It varied a lot. I definitely, the recipes that were family recipes or recipes I have made over the years definitely kind of held up better.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, a lot of things had worked pretty well, if I remember correctly, just because I had tried them so many times. I mm-hmm. think a big thing was a lot of people were like, well, I think that the oven should have been a little hot. Things that were just, you know, different. People have different kitchens. Things
right,
that you can't really
right.
control.
Right.
Which, you know, I really appreciate the recipe tester being thorough, but also there's only so much you can do at
right,
that point.
Right. Now, you have an interesting concept of the adventures. What made you use that concept, and can you explain it a bit?
I put a lot of themes in the book. I think that's my indecisiveness shows very well in this book because of all the things going on. But one of the themes is kind of adventure. So it's split up into spring, summer, fall, winter, and then those are split up into adventure chapters. So there's a picnic chapter, a berry mm-hmm. picking chapter, camping. And I did that because it feels kind of like a lot of times people struggle, unless you're really, really into food like I am. But a lot of people I know, normal people, struggle cooking often because it just feels like a chore to them because they're busy. People
mm-hmm.
are just so busy mm-hmm. these days.
Yeah.
And I wanted, and I didn't want my recipes to feel like a chore in
mm-hmm.
any way.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted them to feel kind of like an adventure every time you step into the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new experience. And so I made these experiences around the recipes in hopes that people are going to enjoy the entire experience, that they're going to go in their kitchen and make these, and then maybe they're going to enjoy it outside on a blanket, or maybe they're going to, you know, go camping this weekend and plan a menu around
mm-hmm,
it
mm-hmm.
and just kind of make it a little bit more fun.
Right. Make it also share it and make it more festive.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm.
How often do you cook dinner?
So that's a good question. I try to cook dinner 3 to 4 times a week, and then we always go out on Fridays, and then it's always like it could be up in the air for the weekend depending on what we have going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I do try to cook dinner a lot, and then lunches are a little bit more based on how crazy the day is.
Mm-hmm. And now when you go out, from your book, I understand there aren't as many vegetarian restaurants or options as there are probably in New York. Do you have to scrutinize the menu before you select a restaurant?
Yes, definitely. That is something that I feel like I come off as a little bit high-strung because I always check a menu before I go there. But for I'm located in a university city, so
mm-hmm.
We have a pretty good range here. We have a ton of ethnic food, international cuisine, which really helps because there's a lot of vegetarian options. But as soon as you get out of the major cities in the Midwest, it can be really hard
mm-hmm.
to find something on your menu.
Mm-hmm.
So I always encourage people to look it up beforehand, or, you know, if you're outgoing, don't be afraid to ask either
mm-hmm.
If you go wherever, but then just make sure you just ask. Because
mm-hmm.
I've never had someone turn me down or not
right.
be able to make something work.
Right, right. Well, there's always grilled cheese, and there's always macaroni and cheese.
Exactly. There's always something in the, like a quesadilla. You could make
right.
any, there's got to be something back there that they can
right.
make, or pasta.
right, without meat sauce. So
yeah.
What was the hardest part of writing this book?
Oh, man. The hardest part of writing this book was just being an author for the first time. Like,
mm-hmm.
there were so many elements of it I didn't think about going into it. Like, parts that took, you know, some parts went by really fast, and some
mm-hmm.
parts just took way longer than I thought. Since I was doing the writing and the photography
mm-hmm.
and the developing and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
I just kind of had to pace myself. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm used to doing a project where I just dive in, do it for a week, and then submit it. So,
right.
this took 2 years. So it was kind of just learning to pace myself and just be willing to go with the flow.
Would you switch around tasks? Would you do some recipe development, then photography, and then do a little writing, the blurbs that you have at the beginning of the chapters?
Yeah. So I didn't want to get burnt out. I basically tried to do at least a recipe a day and do whatever I was feeling that I still needed to knock out. So I would just try to go recipe shopping every day and try out a new recipe. And then as soon as I'd finish it, I would type it up, or edit it, anything that I wanted to change. And then after I finished a full chapter, I would go back and try and write the head notes for it.
Now, does that mean you would have that recipe for dinner or dessert?
I would, yes. Yes, exactly.
So you were eating your own work.
Yeah, and I fed so many of my neighbors and so many friends when I was making this book. I had people like on speed dial that I was just like, I just made 3 pies. Do you want to come over? And they knew.
You must have been very popular then.
I was, yeah, which I think helped me sell some books in the end, because everyone loves to point to that recipe that I made them and be
right.
Like, oh, this was so great.
Right. Now, what was the most fun part of writing the book?
Oh, so I think the most fun was definitely the photography. It's just my favorite aspect. I loved just traveling and trying to get, take photos of new places that people maybe wouldn't associate with the Midwest. And then also taking that food to those places. And I just love the photography aspect of it.
Yeah, because you have a mix of, there's food photos, but there's also a lot of Midwest nature photos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a lot of people, I don't know, when I meet people on the coast, a lot of people just think of us, as cornfields and stuff like that. So I wanted to make sure to get some beautiful shots of our huge lakes and our forests and just kind of incorporate everything.
Now, what kind of help did you have writing the book?
So for the book, I did hire recipe testers, which I just mentioned, and I had there's a couple illustrations in the book. I did not do the illustrations. And then my publisher, and I worked with my publisher, and I had a really great team over there. I had an editor over there, I had an assistant editor I worked with, and then I had a designer that did the entire layout for it. And she got all the specs together and everything like that. So, and right now I'm working with a PR team over there, and there's 3 more women that I'm working with. So it's like I'm kind of getting all the attention, but really there was like a team of 10 of us working on this book.
Okay. What help do you wish you had? What would you do differently if you wrote another similar book?
I think that, it's just a lot of trial and error. I think that just like if I was to do it now, I could probably do it in half the time because I have a system down.
Right, because you've learned how.
I learned so much from the first time around. I'm not sure what help I would want, though.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. So you're an independent entity. You're. You do everything.
I'm definitely a little bit of a control freak, so it's very. I like having that control, so then I can. No, every aspect is exactly how I want it.
Right, because I think food photo shoots sometimes probably ruin the food. Did you spray your food or do anything weird to it?
No, I did not. Every once in a while I would spray some water to, freshen up the produce, but I don't put any of that glue or
any other weird stuff. Right.
Yeah.
Will there be another? And will it be a recipe book?
Will there be another one? Sorry, what did you say?
Another book. And will it be a recipe book? What do you think?
So I have been working on a second book, and it is going to be a recipe book.
Oh, okay. Vegetarian, I presume.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So you'll have to keep us guessing. Now it's time for our break. We will be back with Shelley in a moment discussing Vegetarian Heartland.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh cheese curds. Or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company. The operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com. And as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
Hi, my name's Katie Kiefer. I'm the host of What Doesn't Kill You on the Heritage Radio Network. I do a show about politics and policy around food. Food and agriculture. You know, what feeds us. Tune in on Mondays at 12 p.m. to hear about politics, food policy, agriculture, cattle disasters, you name it. I cover it. Basically, whatever interests me, I'm going to bring to you. Support my show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming. You can go to theheritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to become a member today. Show us some love, especially me. I need it.
Hi, it's Diane Stemple back with Shelley Westerhausen talking about recipes from the vegetarian heartland. So, hi, Shelley, we're back.
Hey, welcome back.
Did you hear we were advertising Wisconsin cheese during the break?
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
yes,
nice Midwestern plug. They are a very big sponsor for Cutting the Curd. Anyway, on page 15, very early on, you give guidelines for creating a vegetarian meal. Generally, you know, a starch base, vegetables, protein, spice flavoring. I would love more of that, actually, because it sounded easier.
Yeah, so yeah, the thing is I want vegetarian cuisine to feel approachable for people.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these are, you know, you can break it down to really simple meals if that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So in that section I talk about how, you know, if you want to create a really easy meal, all you have to do is choose a base such as grains, pasta, quinoa, or bread,
right.
And then you can top it with a vegetable. You could maybe skip the vegetable if you want, but that's my favorite part. And, you know, there's so much you can do with vegetables.
Yeah.
You can steam them, you can roast them, you can boil them. And then I always add a protein just so you're not hungry an hour later. So that can be, you know, beans, eggs, tofu, if you're into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest is kind of like choose your own adventure. So I love to throw, you know, you could throw some sort of dressing or sauce or herbs or whatever. I mean, honestly, you could just probably find whatever's in your fridge that you are really attracted to, pickles, anything like that, and top it. And just, you know, use your own instincts with what flavor combinations are going to work for what you like.
Yeah. I mean, I think vegetables have gotten, I mean, at least with me and with many food people that I eat with, have just gotten more and more popular. Maybe not to the exclusion of meat, but they are, you know, they're given much more attention than they ever were before.
Yeah, I agree. When I first became a vegetarian, I feel like the vegetable scene was very bland, very basic.
Yeah.
And there's chefs that are just doing the most creative, gorgeous, delicious things with vegetables these days.
Yeah. Now, which recipes in the book do you cook the most for guests or for dinner?
So for dinner, one of my favorite is the vegan sloppy joes, just because it can be whipped up in under a half an hour and it's super filling.
Okay. So that would be with beans?
Yeah. So it's with beans, and then I throw a ton of vegetables in there, celery, carrots, bell peppers, onions, mm-hmm. and you kind of mix it all. You make a sauce and you mix it all together, and then you put it on, you know, a bun, some mm-hmm. bread of some sort, and then I always put sweet and spicy pickles on it, and it's just great. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's so simple, and it's kind of comforting. And then if I'm having a lot of people over, I oftentimes make, which is also bean-based, is my chocolate chili, which is everyone
yes.
always raves about.
Yes,
and then
that
maybe
made
I'll
me
make
drool.
Some homemade bread if I have time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, which of the recipes do you recommend for non-vegetarians to try out first?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I think that... I think that the Sloppy Joes would be a really great introduction just mm-hmm. because most people are really familiar with beans, so mm-hmm. I think they would like mm-hmm. it. Another really great one is the spicy peanut lettuce wraps. I think a lot of people have probably had lettuce wraps before, and there's mm-hmm. this peanut, and the peanut sauce is protein packed, so I think that would be a really great introduction for someone.
Okay. Now, how do you feel vegetarianism is different in the Midwest, either back when you started or developing forward?
So I think it's a little bit different here in the aspect that since we have all four seasons, mm-hmm. We kind of have a lot of cozy food. So, for example, out on the West Coast, you know, there's a lot of healthier vegetarian places and like juice bars and things like that. And a juice bar just really wouldn't do that great here in the winter, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And on the East Coast, I mean, there's definitely a vegetarian scene there, but I feel like there's a really big, like we were talking about, fancier vegetarian scene with a lot of chefs just doing crazy, beautiful things with vegetables. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, I think we're a little bit more humble with our food, and mm-hmm. so it's a lot of cozy, like, you know, like I just talked about, like chilies mm-hmm. and Sloppy Joes and, you know, just like veggie burgers and kind of more cozy food that you associate.
Right.
That you might
right.
not necessarily associate with vegetarian.
Right, right. Now, you're a big proponent of the Midwest and especially Bloomington.
I am, yes. I mean,
how
I love,
come? What do you love about
years,
it?
So I love it here.
What do you love about it?
So what I love about Bloomington is, it's like I mentioned earlier, it's a university city. So we have a huge food scene without it being a really big city. So there's mm-hmm. only 40,000 residents, and then there's 40,000 students.
Oh,
but
it doubles.
yeah. Because of the university, though, we have a lot of professors, and we have a lot of international people, so we have just really amazing restaurants, which I really love. And then we're also in the middle of, we're basically a city in the middle of Hoosier National Forest. So it's a giant forest. We've got a huge lake here, so there's so much like nature and hiking and a lot of outdoor activities as well.
Mm-hmm. And a farmer's market.
And the farmer's market, yeah. We have the biggest farmer's market in the state here mm-hmm. on Saturday mornings, mm-hmm. Which I just, you know, I love. It's a really great food community here.
Does it go all year, or does it stop for months in the winter?
It does go all year. It's outside in the summer, and then they move it to an indoor location in the winter.
Okay. Well, that's good. Now, one part of your book made me a little insulted when you said you criticized church basement potlucks because my father's family was from West Virginia, and when we had funerals, we had potlucks in the church basement, and mm-hmm. they were the most amazing food.
What was some of your favorite food that you remember from those?
Oh, there'd be bean dish, beans, all baked, you know, for 2 days, probably with some ham thrown in. I can't lie, but every bean dish tasted different, and then there would be macaroni and cheese, and there'd be casseroles, and there'd be those weird fried onions on top of a green bean casserole, but it would be mm-hmm. delicious. it would be thoroughly delicious. So we would.
I think that. Oh, go ahead.
We would just be, you know, racing through the funeral to get to the food.
That is something nice to look forward to.
Yeah.
I think for me, I wasn't in any way trying to talk bad about those, but I kind okay. of also was trying. I'm trying to give more of a modern look on the Midwest, just because sometimes I do think we look. Some people think of us as kind of, you know, like older, antique-y, and we just eat casseroles with, you know, tater tots on top and things like that. And I kind of wanted to try and showcase a little bit of a, you know, a little more modern Midwest.
Right. And no one's thinking health in the church basement potluck.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so then another thing you talk about is you say you're worried that the Midwest has some self-esteem issues. What are you referring to?
Yeah, so when I graduated from college, a lot of my friends, almost all of my friends, mm-hmm. but my boyfriend who stayed here with me, moved to New York or L.A. or mm-hmm. Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of did that trip where after we graduated, we weren't really sure what we wanted to do. So we went to visit all those cities to kind of see where we were going to settle.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of kept feeling a pull towards here. And, you know, after talking to a couple of friends, a lot of them ended up coming back here after a couple of years and realizing this is where they needed to be. But there was always just kind of this pressure when we were, you know, in school and young that we needed
to think
about
leaving
the coast or mm-hmm. move to a big city mm-hmm. in order to be taken seriously as an artist mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like sometimes, you know, people are feeling that pressure when really we have a lot of great things going on here and a really mm-hmm. great scene that you just kind of have to appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even move away to really notice it.
And I would assume much more affordable.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Now, is the video on your website in your house?
Yes, it is.
It's a gorgeous house.
Thank you.
And I love your kitchen closet.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I recommend that everyone check out, what's the name of your website? Vegetarian Ventures?
.com. Yep.
Yeah. And it has you cooking and then, taking photos of a meal, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And it's very sweet. It's very sweet. And
thank
I love
you.
Your house. I'm coming over next time I'm in Indiana. Anyway, was it a suburb or a small town that you grew up in that was a train ride away from Chicago?
So it depends on who you ask.
Okay.
So I grew up in Indiana, which was only about an hour from Chicago.
Okay.
So if you ask someone who lives in Chicago, they're going to tell you it's not. But a lot of people in my town did work in Chicago, and there was a train that went up there. So we always kind of considered it a suburb.
Okay. So then Bloomington is more of a town? I mean, less, is it more small town or more, it's not a suburb, right?
No, Bloomington is not a suburb.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a small city. I would consider it a small city.
Mm-hmm. So you got more out of the way. Not less.
I did, yeah. I did, but we're kind of in this little, you know,
in a bubble,
in a liberal bubble.
Are you in a liberal bubble?
I am. Yes.
Oh, well, that's good.
We love our little bubble.
Now, you turned vegetarian. How old were you?
So I was 12 when I became a vegetarian.
Now, why?
So, you know, I was just a really stubborn kid, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, kind of awkward, and I wanted to be a vet back then, and
mm-hmm.
my best friend was my dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I just really felt really bad, because I loved animals, and I just felt really bad about eating them. So I just kind of decided one day that I wasn't going to do it anymore, and my parents were totally confused, like annoyed, didn't know what
sure.
to do with me.
Now, did you discuss it with them, or was anyone else a vegetarian? Had you met one?
So I hadn't met one, I don't think, but I was really, and this might be showing my age, but I was really into The Simpsons back then as a kid. And Lisa Simpson, the daughter on it, was a vegetarian. So I think maybe, and I don't remember, but I feel like maybe.
Oh, she could have been a role model.
Yeah, exactly. And Yeah, exactly. And I was just such a stubborn kid that, of course, my brother was like, you're not going to do it. So then I just had to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Now, how supportive were your parents?
So my dad was definitely frustrated. We lived between a farm, and he had a cow in his freezer from down the street, the farmer down the street. And he was very annoyed that he was annoyed that my stepmom would have to make another meal for me and things like that. But my mom was really supportive, but she definitely was just like scared about me getting enough nutrition and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And all of her friends were like, don't worry, she'll grow out of it. She'll get sick of peanut butter. And it never happened.
No, you just made it a career.
Exactly. Yeah.
You expanded instead of getting sick of stuff, you found better and better food to eat.
Exactly. Yes. It opened up a whole new world for me.
Now, do you cook for your parents? Do they now love your food?
They do. Yeah. I hosted Thanksgiving a couple last year, and that was the first time I had done like a big meal for them, and they were really supportive. And I had a launch party for the book, and I actually made all vegan food. So I did vegan recipes for the book, which is not vegan. It's just vegetarian.
Right.
But my family, you know, kind of the whole time while they were helping me make them, were just like, is this really vegan? Mm-hmm. Is this really this good? And so they were really proud of me. It was really nice. But after all these years, they finally come around.
Oh, okay. Now, how many whole families does anyone, I mean, you may not know the answer to this. Is there an answer? How many whole families are vegetarian, I wonder, in America?
You know, that's a really good question, because whenever I meet someone who's vegetarian, the first thing I asked was, you know, if they've been it for a long time, I always ask, you know, were your parents vegetarian? And I feel like I never, ever get that their parents are vegetarian.
Yeah. But I feel like your generation is more likely to be vegetarian and then just cook that way, and that your kids will be vegetarian if you have them, because that's what's being offered.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that my generation really has so much accessible to us that, you know, others didn't with the internet.
Yeah.
I mean,
before
the internet, where did you get your recipes? You got it from your family. Like,
right.
If they're not eating vegetarian, you're not going to know about it.
That's true. That's true. Well, it's been very delightful to talk with you on the radio. I wish you luck with your book and your sales and your, you know, vegetarianism. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Okay. This is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. You should join the radio station as soon as you hear this. Get online and call them up. Thanks. Bye. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world, or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.